and gentlemen, welcome to episode 85 of the Ringside Rundown Podcast. My name is Eric Vasquez, and joining me on the line is my podcasting partner in crime. Yes, that rhymes. She is Shay Hickson. Shay, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad on this fine Tuesday evening. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. It's getting a little warmer. Unfortunately for the podcast, I have to shut off my fan, close my door, so I'm a little bit suffering, but we'll make it through.
Yeah, I had that problem last night. My air conditioning touchpad decided to just die.
Oh no!
But luckily it was not very warm yesterday, and I have a couple fans in my apartment, so it got replaced today. So I'm back to my good old air conditioning. I enjoy it very much, but glad it happened when it was like 70 and not 85, because I would have been dying right there with you.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Like I said, this is episode 85, so we're inching closer to 100 episodes, which is something I didn't think was going to be possible with the way I do things, but we're inching closer to episode 100. How are you feeling?
It's crazy. I don't think I ever am going to get over the fact that we've been doing this for 2 years now, pretty much. It feels like, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was 2 years.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a long time, and like I said, usually with like projects and stuff like that, I kind of let them go to the wayside. But with this one, it's been so much fun that, you know, we're doing such a good job, and I'm happy to keep doing it.
Yeah, me too. It's just it always blows my mind, and I know some of our listeners have heard this before, but some maybe haven't. The first time you and I actually met was right before we recorded the first episode. We did not. Like, I mean, we messaged each other a little bit here and there on, like, Twitter, but the first, like, I guess you want to say voice-to-voice meeting was right before the first episode, and that could have went horribly wrong, let's be honest. That could have been terrible. Like, okay, well, we have stuff in common, but we have absolutely, like, zero, like, bounce off each other energy, but somehow the podcasting gods smiled on us, and I'd say it's been working pretty well for 85 episodes, so.
For sure.
We definitely got lucky, but I am very happy that it did.
Yeah, for sure. So if episode 85 is your first exposure to us, first thank you, obviously. And what Shay and I do here is we talk about pro wrestling. And the way we talk about pro wrestling is we allow the listeners to send us in some questions about what's been going on throughout the week in pro wrestling. And we basically just give some answers, give our opinions. We may go on rants, and we have a good time here. So if you're a pro wrestling fan and you're checking us out for the first time, grab a sandwich, grab a drink, get comfortable, and hopefully you enjoy the show. So like I said, what we do here is we answer some questions. We talk about pro wrestling. But before we start, I just want to give a quick condolences to the family of the Iron Sheik, who sadly passed away a little over a week ago. Obviously a prominent figure in the world of professional wrestling, a legend, a Hall of Famer, obviously. And just really interesting to when you lose these people in wrestling. Iron Sheik was a little before my time, but the interesting about Iron Sheik was he was the kind of like the in-between, like the bridge between Bob Backlund, who was a pretty prominent good guy in wrestling at the time. And then came Iron Sheik, and then Iron Sheik was like the bridge to Hulk Hogan in the sense of world champions. Without Iron Sheik, Hulkamania probably wouldn't have gotten a big reaction like it did when Hulk Hogan won the world title from him at the time. So Iron Sheik, obviously being the catalyst, he was like the prototypical heel. He was a foreigner, and obviously his game was he wanted to spit on America. He would say, "Iran number one, USA, ha, poof," and he would spit on them. So, and that would drive the fans crazy. But he also had sort of like an intimidating factor where he kind of scared people in a way. You know, and he made it believable to be a bad guy. He believed, you know, he was a monster. He was physically empowering. He was super strong. He would carry around those Persian clubs that he would swing around. And the cool thing about that, he was one of very few that could actually execute those clubs. And that became like a gimmick in itself. But again, you know, just probably I haven't heard a bad thing about the Iron Sheik when people were immortalizing him on the internet and talking about him and sharing stories. They always said he was a good guy to anyone, especially on the independents as he's gotten older and he went to the independents to kind of help out these promotions. Everyone that talked about him on the internet said he was such a good guy. He was so welcoming, so friendly, and made everybody feel like they were important. So we obviously need as many more people as we can get in the industry, especially today. So again, I just want to send out condolences to the family of the Iron Sheik, his friends, his peers, his coworkers. All of those deserve my condolences, and he definitely won't be forgotten.
No, absolutely not. It's just it's always just a shame because it's becoming more and more frequent that we lose these kind of people, and it's like, damn, time is fleeting.
Yeah, you kind of sit back and kind of analyze your own mortality.
Yeah, that can get very dark.
To get dark, but like we're at the age, like you know, we kind of sometimes. You're obviously younger than me, but I'm losing a lot of people from the era of wrestling that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just like you said, it's a part of life. Time is fleeting. So if you gain anything from this message, is just take care of yourself, enjoy the moments, enjoy life, try to be as positive as possible, and try to have an impact the way that the Iron Sheik had an impact on wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. Couldn't have said it better.
All right. So let's get started with our first question, because I know we got a bunch of them coming in. So why don't we get started with our first question?
All right, so we're going to start off with Mike's questions, and his first one is something that I feel like a lot of people were talking about this week in wrestling, considering it's the Adam Cole MJF promo from Dynamite.
Oh.
And, which we said in the pre-production meeting, we have some feelings about certain things about it. So Mike says the Cole and MJF promo mimicking parts of the Cole Karrion Kross promo, except the roles were reversed. Were we a fan of that or not? I'll say no, I was not.
You were not. Why weren't you a fan of it?
Because I get what MJF was trying to do. He was trying to like, oh, just use your words against him. Except the thing is, it literally does not apply to Adam Cole, like at all. So he just kind of said it for the sake of saying it. And of course, yeah, at first I'm like, ooh, wow, he actually went there. But then I'm like, wait a minute, that's dumb. That doesn't even have anything to do with Adam, but okay. Yeah. Like, all right. So, yeah, not really the biggest fan of that part, but it was definitely back and forth. No one was like looking lost on the mic. They both, I'd say, handled it pretty well, but there were just some parts that I'm like, eh, no.
Yeah. I hated the entire thing.
Ooh, all right. All right. I was waiting for this.
I hated the entire thing. And not to be negative, not to be one of those that dunk on AEW or try to find holes in their game or anything, but this was probably the weakest promo MJF could deliver.
Mm-hmm.
He's relying too much on doing things to get a reaction out of the smart wrestling fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at first it was okay. It was good. It worked. But when you do it over and over and over, it kind of loses its luster. You know, not to say to stop doing it, but it was like he took 7 or 8 jabs that were specifically meant to get a reaction out of the smart wrestling fan.
Yeah.
The smark, you know, you know, and it was, if he would have cut it down to maybe 2 jabs and then had more of a substance delivery in that promo, it probably would have gotten a better reaction. Because there was plenty he could have gone off of. He could have talked about Adam Cole's head and neck injury and how he's been out of the game for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so MJF kind of overlapped him, you know. He could have talked about the kind of take a jab at the weak finish from the Jericho match. You know, he could have went that route. The thing about the Karrion Kross thing, like you said, none of it applied to Adam Cole.
No, none of close.
It. None of it applied to Adam Cole. The thing about when Adam Cole delivered that promo to Karrion Kross, it was almost like a light bulb went off in fans' heads.
Yeah.
You know, and they went, maybe he's on to something. And to this day, I don't think Karrion Kross has been able to recover.
No.
That's no. That's the lasting impact of a promo delivery. Just copying it just seems lazy. You know, like I said, you could have taken two bits from that promo and used it. Like he mentioned Vince McMahon, all right?
Yeah.
And how Vince McMahon didn't see Adam as a top star. He could have used that, no problem. Use that. That makes a lot of sense. It's a jab, but it's like a jab that gets you thinking. He could have used the whole Keith Lee rumor. That would have been an okay path. But to use everything, plus the Karrion Kross promo was ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also not to mention the fact too that not every AEW fan has watched NXT or WWE, so that reference could have went clear over their heads. All of that could have went clear over their heads, and they're like, okay, what the heck is he talking about? So it's like, yeah, I get what you mean. You gotta can't be on the nose all the time, because not everyone's going to get the references, especially if you have those tribalistic kind of fans that don't watch NXT or WWE and don't know what you're talking about. Then it comes across as confusing.
Right. That's a very good point. Again, it's just like in the beginning when MJF would do this stuff, it would get a reaction, you know, you look back when he called Tony Khan a fucking mark on live TV, that was huge, you know? But it just seems like he's relying too much on the formula of got to get a reaction out of the crowd. The only way I can do that is to use insider terms and insider rumors and things you only read about in the dirt sheets, you know, and it just came across as lazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. And funny enough, that actually kind of segues into Mike's next comment regarding the promo. Before Adam even came out, MJF kind of did the greatest hits of Colorado sucks, your mom swallows, mentions WWE, et cetera, et cetera. He, as we've pretty much implied, much like Tony Khan, needs a new formula to get a reaction, which, we've even said it before months ago too, the low hanging fruit. It's like, he can't find that balance between, okay, well, if you can't use the insider terms, don't use the low-hanging fruit of insert town here sucks. Oh, all the insert town people here are stupid and lazy and just broke. Like, that doesn't work anymore. You gotta get creative. And I think right now he's just not being creative at all. Like, he's not even trying, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't have any luster to it. It's not believable. Again,
no.
You took a promo from another company and tried to use it against the guy that delivered it. And not only that, Adam Cole just kind of rolled with it. Adam Cole didn't deliver any knockout blows or anything like that in the promo that he was giving to MJF. He just kind of rolled with it, did the stereotypical, you're a coward, nobody likes you. But the fact that MJF's side of the promo relied so heavily on his shtick, it made Adam Cole come out looking like the better of the two.
Yeah. You know?
He just smiled at Adam Cole.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Adam Cole just smiled at MJF. And I mean, MJF keeps doing this thing where he's like, I like you. You know, I'm a big fan of your work. Buddy. You know, which is okay, but he did it for Jericho, he did it for Punk, you know, he's done it for he even did it with Jungle Boy and Darby Allin and Sammy Guevara. Like, it's a same pattern. You realize he's reached a plateau. He's reached a ceiling.
Yeah.
You know? And is he going to be able to break that ceiling? Because you hear the spattering of MJF's title reign isn't really hitting on all cylinders.
No.
And to think, you know, all the discourse about AEW is now like their ticket sales are a little bit weaker.
Yeah.
You know, Double or Nothing was a mid pay-per-view and things like that. But it all falls on who's your top guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's your centerpiece? Who are you? Who not all the focus is on, but the main focus. Like, this is the guy that's going to, he's the poster child of the company. You know, he's the one that's going to be putting butts in seats.
Yeah, you know? He's not.
And he's not. The problem there, too, is if he's not the one, who is? Because AEW has a lot of bodies, but there's a huge percentage of those bodies that aren't championship material now, world championship material.
No, not at all.
You know, and the thing is, if it was a company that had 50 years in the game like WWE, that's okay. But you're a company that's only 4 years old.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to have a centerpiece to say, this is our world champion. This guy is the best of the best in our company, but the competition is still stiff, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just not delivering. And it sucks because I want everybody to succeed. I want MJF to succeed as a champion. I want the company to succeed as a wrestling company, because there are some good aspects to it. You know, it's just AEW has become very polarizing, and the usage of that promo and the way it was delivered really didn't do any favors. I mean, I was stoked when Adam's music hit.
Yeah, me too.
You know, because it was kind of, it wasn't really unexpected, but it was like, this is a good time to do this.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But again, it's I go back to the same thing where I say, man, if only they didn't do the four pillars match and they stretched that out one-on-one, you know, it would have been great, because it focuses on young talent that's on the cusp of doing something good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And MJF could have had these one-on-one promos instead of trying to attack all three. There's so many glaring things about this reign. It's just, I can see why people say it's not hitting well.
Would you go so far as to say that this title reign is exposing MJF?
The problem with the exposing part is I'm looking at it as, if we would see him wrestle more,
yeah,
and see his work in the ring, maybe it wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah.
You know, because there, you know, he's had a lot of great matches. Mm-hmm. He's had the great Iron Man match with Bryan Danielson. The dog collar match with CM Punk was great. The four pillars match, as much as I hated that it was a four-way match, it was a great match. He can have these great matches, but they're so few and far between. You know, like, it's always just like, MJF is obligated to come to the city and cut a promo. Well, he's just going to cut the promo and say the city sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
We know it's going to happen. So it's just like, again, it doesn't have any luster. It doesn't, yeah, it doesn't pique your interest when he comes on the screen, because you know what he's going to say.
Yeah. Well, and you also have to think, too, he kind of, we should have seen this coming to a degree, because how many times will we complain with his labors of MJF?
Yeah, and he's done that so many times.
Yeah.
Like, one time is great. Save it for a couple years and then bring it back.
Not literally the next feud you have, because it was Cody, and then it was Wardlow. And I think it was was it Cody or was it Jericho?
It was Jericho. It was Jericho.
Yeah. And then Wardlow. So now it's like, where have we seen this before? Oh, wait, this literally just happened during your last feud. And it's like, it's not even like you're trying to be subtle about it. It's literally the same format, just different person, maybe different order of the matches. But it's just like, what is happening?
Yeah, not only that, I'm so confused as to, like I said, when Adam's music hits, like, and he came out when MJF was saying that he was bored with the competition, he has no competition,
yeah,
which I was actually on board with, because I knew it would invoke somebody coming out and saying, well, I'm going to step up and take that challenge to take that title from you. So I was on board for that second. Adam comes out. I'm like, okay, this is great, because we've been asking for this for a while. But it was just like, it went off the rails. Like,
I think so far, I feel like this reign has kind of just gotten to the point where if it was supposed to go the way it was supposed to go and Adam came out, people would have been like, why are they doing this so soon? There's like no way that MJF can lose the title this soon. But now it's almost like, maybe he can, because yeah.
And then they're doing this match on Dynamite. Why give that away? You know, I'm all for free as much as we can, but that's a match right there that can sell some pay-per-view.
That's another problem you've been saying for the get-go. It's like, stop putting all these pay-per-view style matches on a Dynamite and then expect whenever you get to a pay-per-view being like, okay, that's it. Like, we could have seen this on, it starts to blur where it's like, you see a match on Dynamite, you're like, oh, this could have definitely been on a pay-per-view. And then you see a match on a pay-per-view and you're like, oh, we could have just seen this on Dynamite. So it's like, It's blurred the lines this point of what is a pay-per-view quality match in AEW anymore? Because it's not like we see it on the pay-per-view. 9 times out of 10, we see it on Dynamite.
And the only reason I say that is because AEW pay-per-views have a $50 price tag.
You know,
I'm all for having a smattering of pay-per-view quality matches on your TV show. That is, you should do that, because that'll showcase that you can have these banger matches that'll get people going, man, I want to see more of that, you know? And then you have another set of people have another banger match, and it's like, okay, this company as an entirety might be onto something.
Yeah.
But when you're focused on trying to get a rating, so you put the pay-per-view quality matches on your TV show, you're still not getting the rating, you're still not selling tickets, and then you have the audacity to charge us $50 to see this pay-per-view. It's just,
yeah,
you're oversaturating your product. And they got a show coming on Saturday that we have to care about.
Yeah. I mean, and kind of to go off what you said, just look at the Rampage from last week. That in itself could have been just an entire pay-per-view by itself with those matches. And we got all of them for free on TV.
Yeah, it's nuts. But again, MJF has the potential to come across as a top guy, as a top champion.
Yeah.
He has unlimited potential. But even people with unlimited potential, you reach a ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about, how do you overcome that? How do you change your game to say, you know, I'm a chameleon. I can roll with the punches. I can make you go ooh and ah. Because again, wrestling, the performance of wrestling is about invoking the emotion from the audience without blatantly telling them, I want you to cheer, I want you to boo.
Yeah,
you know, it's your words and your delivery and your promo. It's the way you work a match. That is what gets the people to boo or cheer. But it's almost like when MJF delivers these smart mark remarks, it's almost like he's telling him, hey, all you smart fans, cheer for me, even though I want you to hate me.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know? It's not a good idea. None of it is. It's not working. It's not a
good idea. I want to see an evolution of MJF. I want to see him up his game, you know?
And yeah.
And Adam Cole's the perfect guy to do that, because Adam Cole, for all the flack that he gets, that he's not a big man, he doesn't have size to him, he's kind of dale and frainty, he can deliver these promos and he has charisma. It almost overshadows his wrestling ability, you know?
Yeah, sometimes.
How charismatic he is, how he can deliver these believable promos. And you talk about MJF wanting to change his game. Adam Cole went from being, he could be the top bad guy in any company.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing him as the good guy that people just respect his grind. They respect his work ethic. They respect the fact that, again, he can deliver these charismatic promos. He's charismatic when he comes out to the ring, and he's pretty solid in the ring.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
So people respect that, and I think that's why babyface Adam Cole is actually working, you know? So again, it's like you got to up your game.
Yeah, and MJF is just not doing that right now, but
definitely not.
But yeah, it's like, for all, if you would have said even last year, oh yeah, Adam Cole's going to be one of the biggest baby faces in the entire company, I would have been like, yeah, okay, sure. But he makes it work. It's not one of those where it's like, okay, no, you're a perennial bad guy, you're trying to be nice. It's almost like, what's a good example, I guess? I guess like, if you would say Natalia, I suppose, is like, from what you see from her and what you hear from her, 9 times out of 10, you think like, okay, automatic, like, good guy. And then when she tries to be bad, it's like, okay, yeah, sure, all right, whatever. It just comes across as just forced and acting. Him, it's just natural. Like, he could be a good or a bad guy. You can do either or. And that takes a lot of talent, because one side could come across a very forced, but he just does it effortlessly on both sides. And it's impressive.
Yeah, it is. I'm still looking forward to the eventual match. I'm still kind of looking forward to the match tomorrow. And the thing is, like, on paper, the card for Dynamite tomorrow is pretty good.
Yeah.
But again, they have Forbidden Door coming up, and thankfully they have at least two advertised matches that they can justify close to a $50 price tag. Because Bryan Danielson and Okada, if you're a hardcore wrestling fan, that's a dream match right there. We get the rematch between Ospreay and Kenny Omega, and then there's like little rumblings, and Kenta's trying to build this up, like, pay me if you want me to do this, you know, Kenta versus CM Punk.
Yeah,
you know, Battle of the GTS, I think it is a money match. No matter what your feelings about CM Punk is at this point, like, you gotta want to see that match, you know?
Yeah,
you know, so like, if they can make that happen, that's three matches right there that you're like, damn, those are some solid matches. Again, you don't want it to be like Double or Nothing, where like the last two matches were the best matches on the card and everything was just pretty mid, but like,
yeah,
you know, those are three solid matches that would sell some tickets to some hardcore wrestling fans, get you some pay-per-view buys. So again, they got a lot going on. It's almost like they got too much going on.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly, because then after Forbidden Door you got All In, and literally the next week you have All Out, and we still don't understand what's going on there, but too much.
It's a lot. Like, they're oversaturating the product.
Yeah, that's a good way to lose it, and hopefully that doesn't happen, but goddamn. It's just so much.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Ugh. Alrighty, so Mike's next question is, what are our thoughts on Thea Hale being the first to challenge Tiffany Stratton?
I love it. I love Thea Hale.
Yeah,
she's like, she's a firecracker. Like, she's crazy.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, a little bit.
She comes off as crazy, You know, like, she's been in a couple matches, but they've been mostly like tag matches, so you can't really tell like how good she is in the ring. But like her personality, and again, this is a big thing about wrestling, her charisma to be that firecracker, that little, I think so. I saw somebody on Twitter refer to her as a chihuahua.
I mean, not wrong, pretty accurate.
You know, so like, you know, like that comes across very well because she just makes it work. The danger part about this is you have two pretty good athletes in the ring with great looks and everything, and a lot of charisma on both sides. They probably can deliver some pretty good promo work to build up their match, but they are fairly inexperienced.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a little dangerous, but there's always a possibility they can go out there and tear the house down, which is what I want from anybody, you know? So, like, on the back that I like Thea Hell and I like her character and you know, the way she's just manic and, like, you can rev her up, you know, just to go crazy, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
like
yeah.
Like a chihuahua.
Like a boy.
Yeah, it's just... And the fact that she's so young, I think she's only like 19.
Of course she is.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, I feel like we say that a little too often now, but we don't really have much of a choice. But
wrestling is a young kid's game now in 2023. You know, it's all about the young cats. So for like AEW, who has the ability to bring in basically anybody that WWE doesn't want, try to focus on gaining that young, hungry talent, you know? And that's the one positive thing about NXT. Like I said before, I'm not the biggest NXT fan. I feel like there's times where you're like, okay, I'm getting into this. And as soon as you get into it, it's like a new crop of people come in with these new gimmicks and these new characters. And you're like, ugh, now I got to see if I want to invest my attention into these people. You know, I feel like right now NXT is on a high point because they have a lot of talented people. Again, Thea Hell is a good one. Tiffany Stratton's a good one. Dijak is great. Ilya Dragunov. And then they bring in Mustafa Ali. Corbin's fine. Carmelo Hayes is great. Even heel Braun Breaker is awesome. Yeah. And then you got, they're going to bring in the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. That's only going to get more eyes for people that don't watch NXT, like you said earlier. You know, Seth Rollins is going to be on that show having a match against Braun Breaker for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. If that doesn't get more new eyes on NXT, I'm afraid nothing will.
Yeah, at that point, it's like, I don't know what more you could do. I mean, it's Seth freaking Rollins. Like, come on.
Yeah, and so again, I'm definitely looking forward to Thea Hell, Tiffany Stratton, and I think Tiffany Stratton with her match against Lyra Valkyria at the last pay-per-view opened a lot of people's eyes to see, okay, maybe she's not just the prissy blonde gimmick. She has some athletic ability. That moonsault is a work of art.
So it's so cool.
Yeah, it's a work of art. And she's just athletically gifted, you know, and the whole point of NXT nowadays is to see these young up-and-coming talent kind of put everything together.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
they're still learning. So, like, to be in that position, they obviously see something good in you.
Yeah, exactly. So, I'm excited to see what happens from it. I mean, could only go up from here. You never know. I mean, like you said, you hope it doesn't go south where it's you two are very inexperienced and this could go horribly wrong, but I don't think it will. I think it'll be fine.
Yeah, I think it'll be good.
I agree. So Mike does not know if anyone caught this. The night JD McDonagh debuted a few weeks ago, but when he was being interviewed in the parking lot, Finn Balor was watching from above. So if JD finds his way to the Judgment Day, Mike's calling it. He's going to be the one to turn on Priest and kick him out like they did with Edge.
When I first initially read this question, I wasn't on board with it because, like, I'm a fan of the Judgment Day and what they're doing. They're such a unit that clicks. However, seeing the match that Damian had with Seth, and then seeing his reaction to Finn coming out when he told Finn stay in the back, and then the match that he had against Riddle to qualify for the Money in the Bank on Raw last night. Damian Priest is on an incredible run ever since Backlash. To the point where it's like, I like him as a bad guy because he's such a big, intimidating figure. But maybe he can get by as a good guy based on the fact that he delivers these performances in the ring that get people talking.
Yeah.
So you align him. Let's say they do turn him and he's a good guy now. Mm-hmm. And he goes on to have this program with Finn Balor. It's going to be logical because they both come from Judgment Day. But as far as in-ring quality, which is the main thing I always look for, is the in-ring quality. It's going to be off the charts. Now, as far as JD McDonagh, we saw a little bit of a glimpse of that seed being planted last night, you know, when him and Finn Balor were talking backstage.
Yeah.
And Damian walks in and he's like, "What's up with that?" You know, it's like,
yeah, Finn's like, "Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry about it."
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, that would be kind of cool. Like, you know, again, it's just, does Damian, which I'm sure he does, I'm just posing the question, does he have the same charisma as a bad guy to deliver a good quality as a good guy?
Yeah, the question.
You know, yeah, so can he transfer that charisma, you know, to make that work? You saw a glimpse of it in, like, his early days of NXT where they kind of turned him after he won the North American title and things like that. So yeah. I'm sure he can do it. I'm a big fan of what he's doing. I'm kind of disappointed that they're planting the seeds to have a dissension in Judgment Day because, they all kind of just click, which is crazy because you have a Mexican, an Australian, a Puerto Rican, and an Irish man all working together as one, as a group. You know, it just works, you know, and it's crazy. So, like, it's almost like, damn, they haven't milked it for all it's worth yet, so you already want to break it apart?
Mm-hmm. You know? I don't want it.
Yeah, but I'm here for it, for sure.
Yeah, I could see it happening, I just don't want it to, but I wouldn't be surprised if it happens, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
All right, so we got a Forbidden Door question.
Yay.
If Kota Ibushi is on Forbidden Door, who do we want to have him square off against?
My pick would be Takeshita.
God, could you imagine? Well, yeah, they've been, talking trash about everybody, so yeah, it would make sense.
Yeah, obviously because, you know, Takeshita's been targeting the Elite, mainly Kenny Omega. Kota Ibushi's Kenny Omega's best friend. Not only that, but, like, they had this match, I think it was back in 2006, Kota Ibushi and Takeshita. And I only saw, like, a chopped up Twitter version of the match. But some of the spots that they were doing and the shots that they were taking, you know, and this was a young Takeshita. They were just going at it back and forth. So it's almost like, damn, like, you really want to see this. And not only that, but, like, Kota's taking shots of him, calling him a Kota Ibushi imitation.
Yeah.
You know, which is, right there, those are fighting words.
Oh, yeah.
So, and like, you already have Kota Ibushi saying he wants to be committed to AEW. He wants to help AEW grow. You know, I think that's the money match right there. They would, again, like I said, they had a banger match back in 2006. Imagine what they can do in 2023 on pay-per-view with a big presentation like Forbidden Door.
Yeah, that would be a good one. I feel like that's like the best option you could probably have. So I guess I'll just go for like a wild card pick just because I want to see the two styles mesh together, him and Malakai.
Ooh.
That would be insane.
That would be so much fun.
Right, that would be, oh, just the strikes that we would witness.
Her strikes would be crazy because, you know, Malakai has that Muay Thai background. Mm-hmm. I think Kota Ibushi dabbled in Muay Thai a little bit. I know he dabbled in some form of MMA.
Yeah,
but like you said, the strikes would just be insane. And I mentioned this on Twitter a while back. Kota Ibushi does this thing where, like, he's having these strike battles back and forth, and then all of a sudden he just goes blank. Like, he eats your shots with no expression, and then he brings it to you tenfold. Like, he basically cripples you when he's in this fugue state by delivering some of the most lethal blows I have ever seen somebody deliver to another person in a wrestling ring.
It's insane.
So, like, if he can bring that fugue state Kota Ibushi to AEW, like, people are just going to be enamored by it. I think people who've never seen Kota Ibushi, that's almost like as crazy as people going, well, who the hell is Kazuchika Okada?
Oh, don't get Eric started again.
You know, it's like, it's almost the same thing. Like, if you're a wrestling fan and you don't know who Kota Ibushi is, you need to rectify that immediately.
Google.
Use your Google.
Use your Google. That's a new one. Use your noodle. Use your Google.
Use your Google.
Oh, God. People. Google's not that difficult. Before we go on another Google tangent, is Money in the Bank where Bayley finally turns on EO and the damage control split happens? Oh, it's so tough to tell now.
Yeah, I think, and not her fault, obviously, but Dakota Kai getting hurt kind of put the wrench in that.
Now I'm all sad again. God damn it. Yeah, I feel like they were heading that way, and then she got hurt, so now they kind of have to, like, scramble to fix the story, because I feel like they could have easily done the whole she's stuck in the middle, she doesn't know what to do kind of thing, but when you have no one to be stuck in the middle, then what do you do? So, yeah, honest answer, I have no idea if Money in the Bank's the time.
I would say yes, because... Ugh. What this draws parallels to is, you remember the Money in the Bank? I don't know if you remember. It featured Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
You know, and that kind of built the match as it was happening because they were a team. They were a cohesive unit. But they were both in the Money in the Bank ladder match. So, and like, people... Like, Damian Sandow had to make the decision, am I going to allow my friend Cody Rhodes to achieve this moment, even if it comes at my expense, or am I going to take the moment for myself?
Yeah. You know?
So I feel like they can honestly mimic that. It wouldn't come across as lazy because it was so long ago that it was done. I don't even think people remember to draw those parallels. I can't even figure out how the hell I drew that parallel, but
because it at least makes sense. It makes sense though, because I feel like you could easily just have Bayley fit into that role of like, all right, come on, EO, like, yeah, I'll get this, and then when I win the title, like, you'll be the first one to get a shot. And EO's like, no, maybe time for me to do something. So
that's a good way to build that up, you know, where like Bayley's like, you know, we have to work together because we're damage control, but ultimately I have to gain the briefcase. And when I do, you'll be the first one to get that shot.
And he'll be like, excuse me? No, that's not how that works.
You know, and then And then EO can kind of go along with that. But then what if you simply have, you know, Becky Lynch kind of whisper in EO's ear, like, hey, she's manipulating you. You know, it doesn't have to lead to anything involving Becky and EO, but obviously Becky knows Bailey like the back of her hand. So she can see it happening where Bailey's trying to negotiate her way into winning this briefcase and she'll give EO the first shot. Becky can kind of see that manipulation. And even though Becky's in the match, she wants to win the match on merit the same way anybody would. So she can kind of just, you know, see EO backstage and go, you know, she's playing you for a fool. She's manipulating you, you know, and that can sow those seeds. That can start dropping those seeds that you might see an issue between Bailey and EO come to pay-per-view.
And start popping that popcorn. Yeah, that'd be a good way of doing it. Maybe it will happen at Money in the Bank then. Who knows?
I think there's a fair possibility because, again, you know, what do you gain from helping your friend achieve that goal when the objective is for you to get that?
Exactly. You know? Doesn't do anything.
You know, the goal is not help your friend get the briefcase. It's like you have to battle your friend for that briefcase.
Yeah, exactly. So, oh, maybe the end, isn't it?
Yeah, it just, you know, Damage Control had a lot of potential. Yeah. You know, it's sad that Dakota went down, but in the end, before Dakota went down, there was already those little chirps of maybe they really don't need this group.
No.
You know, because again, you go back to those individual matches that Dakota had with Becky and then EO had with Becky. You go back to those matches and those girls shone bright.
They showed
people who weren't familiar with their game, like, these girls have a lot of potential.
Absolutely. You
know, to be not potential to have great ring matches, great WWE careers. They have potential to be top stars in the game. You know? So, like, it would suck to see Damage Control separate, but in the end, it can only do good for Io Sky, and then eventually when Dakota Kai comes back, it'll be great for her.
I can only hope. Soon enough, I suppose. All right, and Mike's final question, and the one I wanted to surprise you with. What wrestler do we think gets over-criticized the most?
I really had to think a lot about this. And I came up with two answers.
Okay.
One is kind of obvious, Orange Cassidy.
Yeah.
People look at the gimmick, at the character, and they see the laid-back Dude Lebowski kind of attitude, and they see the spots where he does the soft strikes and everything, you know, as sort of a comedy act, and I get that, but you only focus on that part if you haven't watched an Orange Cassidy match in its entirety.
If you
watch an Orange Cassidy match in its entirety, you realize, damn, he's one of the top performers in the game right now. You want to talk about in a time that we live, this day and age, where now we're focusing on title reigns, title legitimacy, title lineage, and how important titles make wrestling. Look at what he's done for the AEW International Championship.
Exactly. He speaks for himself. He's
the first champion. You know, and the quality of his matches that he's had have been top notch.
Oh yeah, he hasn't had a bad match yet.
He hasn't had a bad match since he showed up in AEW, and he had that match with Jericho where they had orange juice in a dunk tank.
That was a thing, wasn't it?
that was a thing that happened, and you could easily look at that and look and say that's a down moment in Orange Cassidy's career, but nobody fucking remembers that match.
No, not at all.
Not at all. They remember every single match that he's done so beforehand. Look at the match he just had with Swerve.
Oh, that was such a good match.
That match was insane. When he did that tope to the outside and then Swerve caught him, hit him with the brainbuster on the outside.
Yeah.
I lost it. So Orange Cassidy is definitely one. Another one that may surprise you is the Young Bucks.
I could see that though. Yeah.
I feel like the Young Bucks, every wrestler deserves some type of criticism.
Yeah.
But the over criticism of the Young Bucks that they get, I think people look at it as like they have to criticize them.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool thing to do.
Yeah, it's the cool thing to do. But if you look at like when they were at their high point, because I feel like even in AEW they've kind of cooled off, but when they were on the indies, when they were part of Bullet Club, and they were running rampant, winning all types of titles everywhere, and they were in such hot demand. Again, it goes back to what I said earlier about evoking emotion. When the Young Bucks would come out and they would do these incredible high spots and they would go and do the super kick party. No matter how you felt about the Young Bucks, if you were in the audience live watching it as it happened, nobody was sitting down.
No, not at all.
You know, everybody was just going crazy. When they would, I remember when they were in ROH and they were doing a super kick party, and ROH had the super kick count, and Carino kept yelling super kick and super kick and super kick. I was at home absolutely losing it because I thought it was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. So it was like and to that point they've kind of definitely grown into performers.
I would agree.
You know, they've grown to be credible performers. So I think the flack that they get needs to ease up a little bit.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that one. Honestly, the two you picked, I couldn't pick any better because the only one that came to mind is about 6 years too late. So yeah, no, I would definitely say Orange and the Young Bucks for sure. Those are definitely the ones that I still see people complain about, and I'm like, why?
I think it's just complaining for the sake of complaining.
Internet wrestling fans? Nah, that doesn't sound right. It doesn't sound right at all, but please. All right, so that was all of Mike's questions. So, Mike, thank you as always. We appreciate it. Let us move on to Jack's questions. And this first one's very interesting because you can see both sides of this argument. What do we think of the argument that Rhea Ripley needs to interact more with the women's division? Rhea standing up to the men has helped get her extremely over, but makes it tougher to build challengers for her level where only Becky and Trish feel credible at the moment.
Go ahead. I want you to go first.
I can see where people are coming from. If they could, I guess, have a better balance, that would be one thing. But I think that they realize the unique performer they have in their hands at the very moment, because I would like you to look at either of the rosters, Raw or SmackDown, and pick maybe, oh geez, you couldn't even pick more than five women, none on like more than one hand, that could go against like any of the men, and they'd be like, oh yeah, sure, that would totally work out. Most people would be like, yeah, no, there's no way. Like, again, maybe a select few, but out of all of the, even that select few, Rhea is the one where you're like, oh yeah, I could totally see her like kicking the shit out of that guy. No one would bat an eye. So it's almost, and it's not like, not a full on comparison, but it kind of reminds you of China a little bit where you're like, oh yeah, like, China could totally go up against the men, and it's like absolutely like it does not look out of place. It looks like, yeah, she belongs there. Rhea does the exact same thing.
Right.
And kind of what we talked about before, it also doesn't help where, okay, well, if she's doing this kind of stuff, yes, she still needs to interact with the women's division, you know, considering she is the women's champion as well. But at the same time, you kind of have to, like Jack says, you got to build up more than just Trish and Becky, because, okay, Rhea's doing all this good stuff and she's going to turn out to be pretty much unstoppable. And who do you have to, like, it's like MJF all over again. Who are you going to have where it's like, oh yeah, they could, like, they could justifiably, or they could definitely, like, take somebody like Rhea out. Not named Trish or Becky. I can't think of anyone.
Yeah. It's tough because I think if you look at, like, NXT, the quality of women in NXT and their work is pretty good. So, like, there's hope that, again, like we've been saying for weeks, WWE needs more women bodies on the main roster.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, it's a curious case with Rhea Ripley because she's mega popular.
Oh yeah.
She, the reaction she got last night on Raw was crazy.
It's insane.
You know, and they give her that belt, you know, which is a great belt. It's curious because it's like, You wonder who can step up, and you think about it, Io Sky is one that can step up.
Yeah.
You know, and they can have a good match. I don't think she's ever had a match with Bayley?
I don't think
she's had a match with Bayley that I can recall. Becky Lynch is another one that she can have great matches with. There's definitely potential there for different people and different programs. It's just a matter of time and circumstance.
Yeah.
You know,
and right now the time's just not on a lot of people's side. So
yeah, it's just
timing.
Yeah. With Rhea Ripley, it's all about timing because you have to put her with someone that's going to elevate her popularity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
If you put her with someone that she has a stinker with, it'll probably do damage to her.
Yeah, and we don't need that. We absolutely do not need her reign to take a hit, because that's the last thing that she would need. With just the rise in the, like, trajectory she's had, that would be the absolute worst case scenario.
Yeah, for sure.
So I say yes, but also it's cool that she's interacting with the men, but they also need to focus on the women's division as well. So I can see both sides of it.
Yeah, for sure. I agree.
Alrighty. So, Jack feels like WWE's definition of undisputed is actually very disputed.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing because it's like, well, who are they on the same level?
Are they?
Like, I don't know. How do you do that? How do you work it out?
I'd love to know, because it confused me, and it's still confusing me. Like, I feel like sometimes they just say things for the sake of saying things, and it makes no sense.
Yeah, it's buzzwords for the sake of buzzwords.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would have to agree with Jack that sometimes I think WWE says things, and we're like, eh, but really, though? Like, is it really undisputed, or it's not?
Yeah, I get the idea that they want to streamline the championships, but I feel like an easier road would just have been to have that title swap, or if you need to stick to the draft, you figure out a way to keep them on the shows that they had the belts for.
Why would they do that, though? Like, why would they not just want to circumvent their own draft? Like, clearly, that's what they do every year. Like, why do we even have the drafts? It's just like half the time they never listen. It's just like they wait 2 or 3 months and then the rules just go out the window. So it's like,
this is why I'm not a fan of roster splits, because it handcuffs you creatively.
Yeah, because you could easily say, oh, well, these two would be really great in a feud, but one's on one show and one's on the other. Like, it shouldn't matter. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's a great time. All right, so I know mom has a question about this or a comment about this, but unfortunately we have to bring this up now. Jack would like to know, when was the last time Charlotte was in a feud that wasn't for a title? He feels like her having feuds for a title, not for a title, could help elevate others and give her character a little more depth. I mean, you say it as if it's the most obvious thing in the world, because guess what? It is. But for some reason, just for... I should have seen it coming. I really should have.
I can't remember last time she had a feud for the sake of having a feud.
Well, that should tell you something then.
It's
not good.
I get that WWE in some capacity wants to make Charlotte a centerpiece of the women's division. You know, she
but.
You know, like I'm trying to justify that.
I'm gonna say there's always a but though, so
but mm-hmm. much like what I said about AEW, this also applies to Charlotte as a person on the roster. She's oversaturated, and that's coming back after like a 2 month hiatus.
Yeah, and it's never even the fact that she's back, it's the fact that they do immediately after she comes back. It's like it was somebody on Twitter that I saw where it is literally the same thing over and over again. She comes back, she wins the title for no reason, she feuds with somebody, loses the title, takes a few months off, comes back, cycle repeats all over again. It's not fun. It gets old, and then you wonder why people don't like her, because it kind of just brings me back to the point of back, I think it was even just last week we talked about this, where she comes up through NXT, and the whole basis of it was, I'm my own person. I don't want to be compared to my dad. I don't need the Flair name. I can do what I can do on my own. And then proceeds to, on the main roster, they then proceed to always mention, oh, well, she could break her own father's record. Like, you know, like, oh, well, this many time, like, champion, just like her dad. So, you kind of just kind of went back on what you wanted to do with her in the first place. So, you didn't want her to be like her father, and then in turn just started having her win championships left and right. And like you said, obviously it took a long time for him to win those titles, so it's a little different. But it's just still like, really? Why are we doing this again? And it's so sad that I don't think anybody expects Asuka to win this match. Nobody. Because every time I've seen it, it's like, well, it was nice while it lasted, because that's the problem. Is that everybody is so preconditioned to, okay, well, Charlotte's back, so she has to win. I think people would be more shocked if she lost. Yeah. But we've seen this story too many times before. We've seen this movie, and I'm tired of seeing the reruns. But whether we like it or not, we're still going to get it when I don't like it one bit.
Yeah, it's just... It does no favors for the title, because it just means, well, if Charlotte can come back and automatically put herself in the title picture, then why can't anybody else? You know,
I mean, and Bianca definitely has a gripe for sure.
Oh, for sure. I'd
be pissed. Say
that. Look at what they're doing to Bianca. They're kind of just pushing her out of the picture.
Yeah,
in a way would be great for Bianca to just, you know, recognize that they're pushing her out and go against the establishment and make sure she's a part of the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it is probably safe to say this really isn't like, we're going to get canceled for this kind of comment, because it kind of is the truth, though. It almost seems like any title Charlotte wins at this point just, I'm not going to say becomes meaningless, it just kind of loses its luster, because... Mm-hmm. What's the point?
Yeah.
Because we all know she's going to lose it in a month or two anyway, and she's going to leave, and she's going to come back and win it, and it means nothing when she has the belt. Plain and simple.
Yeah, it just, you know, she, like, ended, like, again, like I said last week, when Charlotte gives a shit, she could put on great performances.
Yeah.
You know?
That's when she wants to.
Yeah, when she wants to. She needs to understand that at this point in at this point, the way the industry works, like, you can have as many title reigns as possible.
Yeah.
But more than half of those title reigns, nobody can remember.
Exactly. And that's not good. That is a very damning statement when you're like, oh, she won that many times, I can't even remember three quarters of them. That's not good.
Yeah. But people remember the quality matches that you put on.
Yeah. Like her match with Rhea.
Exactly. People are going to remember that match for a very long time.
Yeah. You know,
people remember the quality matches that she puts on. Like, when it almost seems like she only cares when it's WrestleMania.
Yeah, which is very hard to argue with that, really. Yeah.
You know, because you look at her WrestleMania performances, and they're all top tier.
Yeah, it's like, why can't you do this at least once or twice a month any other time of the year? But
like I said, it doesn't do any favors in terms of importance for the championship, because it just comes in and says any old schmo can come off the street, walk through the doors, and say I want a title shot.
Yeah, exactly. It's just not, it just doesn't do any favors for anybody.
Right.
It's, unfortunately, I know that's not going to be the last time we have to talk about that, but Jack would like to see more Alpha Academy. He loves their dynamic. Oh yeah, it's funny. It's very funny.
I thought it was super entertaining what they were doing last night with Maxxine Dupri and something simple like the arm drag.
Yeah.
You know, that when she hit that arm drag on Valhalla last night, it got a reaction.
Yeah, you know? People lost their minds.
Yeah, and the crazy thing about that match was it was so severely cut in time because of the Finn Balor-Seth Rollins exchange.
Yeah.
It got cut in time because they went over during that promo segment.
So yeah,
only like 2-3 minutes of in-ring action, but like Gable made it work.
Yeah, and it still was a pretty decent match. It wasn't, obviously not going to set the world on fire, but it wasn't like, oh, that was terrible. It was clearly because they didn't have time. No, they made the best with what they had.
Yeah. So like, you know, like you said, it's in the middle of trying to put on a great product with great matches and highly athletic contest, you need that sprinkle of entertainment.
Yeah, you gotta laugh a little bit.
Yeah, and I feel like Alpha Academy brings that sprinkle of entertainment, but they also bring the legitimacy of the in-ring performance with Chad Gable.
Oh yeah, so Chad Gable's severely underrated.
Oh, crazy, criminally underrated. But again, like I said, something simple like an arm drag, you know, got the crowd to go crazy.
Yeah.
So, like, obviously it's working. Drag.
Yeah, it's working, so keep doing it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I completely agree. All right, so we did kind of touch on this a little more, but we still definitely agree with this. The way Orange Cassidy has been able to add layers to his character since his AEW debut has been amazing. Jack does not want him to lose the title ever. It's one of the best runs in recent memory. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Be very hard to argue against it.
Yeah, it's rare that even Roman Reigns, like, they were like, well, when he faces Cody at WrestleMania, he should drop the title to Cody.
Yeah,
at WrestleMania, and there's still people that vehemently stand on that opinion.
Yeah, they'll die on that hill.
They will die on that hill. When it comes to Orange Cassidy, and Jack says, I don't want him to lose the title ever. Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat.
I am too. I will admit, I was a little nervous when it was Swerve, because I'm like, oh boy, if it would be anybody, it would be Swerve.
Right.
But we survived. It's fine. I love Swerve too, don't get me wrong. So I would have been happy either way. But I'm glad Orange is still keeping it, because now it's almost just like, now who's next? Now who's going to try?
Right.
So, yeah, it's like, if he holds on to this title for a very long time, I would absolutely not be mad at it, because it's just one of those where it's no, as Orange really is, no pomp and circumstance. It's just Orange being Orange, and it works, and it's still working, and it's going to keep working, so don't take the belt off him, please.
I agree.
All right, so this is, again, the first time we're going to talk about this, but I know it's not the last. Do we think the Guns, being Jay White's grunts, is a good fit for them? Doesn't he kind of already have one, technically?
My opinion is that, and this is crazy to say, but I would be a little bit more invested and a little bit more entertained with Jay White running with the guns instead of running with Juice Robinson.
I hate to agree, but yeah.
Again, yeah. Juice Robinson just doesn't do anything for me.
No, me neither. I mean, to some people it might be funny, which is like, hey, you do you. But to us, it's just, yeah, I no thanks.
Yeah, it's just he doesn't light my world on fire.
No, rock hard, and nothing like God.
Yeah, and it's
that shirt.
Rock hard.
Still hate that. And then the worst part is that. Even just a quick sidebar on that, just some of the shirts AEW has been coming up with lately. I'm like, really, guys? Are you just making this a joke at this point? Like,
yeah, I think it's a running gag at this point.
Like, Takeshita's shirt? Oh, God, that's so bad. All you need to do is cut the left half or right half of that shirt off and it's fine. Just his face. That's all you need. You don't need the stupid bio, really? Like, offensive t-shirt, like with the ad cast. Like, what is going on? Like, or what was it, the dysfunctional melodramatic family, like, what, why?
And I'm not super stoked about the guns either. But I see potential in the guns, you know,
more than Juice.
Yeah, and the thing is, the guns would elevate Jay White because they would put him as the forefront, as kind of their leader.
Yeah, as it is, it should be.
You know, yeah, as because again, Jay White is so far to me kind of like they fumbled him. You know,
yeah, it's not looking so great right now. Yeah,
he was highly touted as a free agent that would elevate any company, which is true. But then he comes in. And it's like, let's put him in tag spots when he comes in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's not showcasing him, you know? It's taking some of the shine off of him.
Yeah, and it's not, yeah, God. Because I even remember, because if I remember specifically, his first singles match was in Pittsburgh. It was at Dynamite in Pittsburgh. People were excited, to say the least.
Yeah.
And then we're like, oh, great. This is like what we might get. And then it's been like, that's it since. Like, it's depressing.
Yeah.
That's just one of those where it's like, I get that you guys are part of a group, but goddamn, just get rid of him already, please.
And the group is like so watered down.
Yeah. Bullet Club. Like, yeah, no.
Like, Bullet Club is not the same Bullet Club from years before.
Oh, absolutely not. Not even close.
It's beaten into the ground.
Yeah.
They have milked that cow for all
it's dead.
It's dead. That cow is dead, buried, and decomposed.
It's bones at this point.
Yeah.
You're trying to milk bones, and it's not going to work.
It's time to give up on the Bullet Club. I love the Bullet Club.
Yeah.
But it's not the same.
No, not even close.
Not even close.
No, it's just not working. Just pull the plug, please.
Yeah.
So all we ask.
Yeah, it's just again, like I said, with the guns, and if it was the guns and Jay White running, there might be some potential there.
Yeah, Juice that's Robinson not bad.
Juice Robinson to me kind of brings it down.
Yeah,
and then again, like, there's so many factions in AEW, you know?
Yeah, because it never changes. It gets worse.
It's almost like we don't have anything for these guys right now, so let's all group them into a faction, and then hopefully they can get over that way.
And then they'll really not have anything to do, because grouping them together is not going to do anything. So,
yeah.
I feel like you lose a group and you get a group, it's just like it never ends, it just keeps going.
And sometimes when you lose those groups like they disband with no explanation, like
the Firm,
look at the Firm.
Literally,
is the Firm still a thing? Like,
I don't think, because you always just see Big Bill and Lee, and that's about it.
Yeah, and that's
Which, okay. I'd prefer if Lee was just by himself, but...
Right. And I like what they're doing with Big Bill and Lee, but again, like, you would probably have to showcase them a little bit more so people can get acclimated with them, and then people kind of decide if they're worth investing in or not.
Exactly. I completely agree. Ugh, God. So now we go to the women's division with AEW. It felt like, to Jack, the top names in the women's division ignored the TBS title, even though we all know it's because Jade was new and 99% of them would have fully exposed her more than she was already. But with STAT, some top names will hopefully challenge it now. I hope so, because it was just... you don't want to say because it sounds mean, but it's the truth. It's almost just like when Jade had the title, there was a limitation where it's like, okay, well, it's technically the women's, not even a secondary title. It's just another women's title, but we really can't put her up against the likes of Jamie Hayter. You can't really put her up against the likes of Britt or like Hikaru Shida or any of them, because they would have exposed her into next Tuesday. It would not have been good. It would have been terrible. And people would have turned on her a lot quicker than they did originally. But now I hope that STAT. I mean, we're already seeing it. We're getting Nyla Rose more. We're getting Anna Jay. It just feels different. I mean, granted, Jade obviously wrestled them, so it's like, can't really compare that yet, but it just feels different where it's like, it actually feels like a wrestling match now instead of, okay, well, they'll try, but Jade, you know, Jade's going to win. It's just like, seems more competitive, if that makes sense, even though you know STAT's gonna win, but it just feels different to me. A good different.
Yeah, because like more than half of Jade's defenses were like 2-minute squashes.
I mean, hell yeah, threw two squashes in there just to get her up to 60-0. That was
and the thing with Jade is like she got to 60-0 and she showed like minor improvements.
Yeah, it never. Yeah, it was not anything that we're like, well, I guess we were proven wrong. It was like, not really.
Her best match came on the night that she lost the title in an impromptu challenge.
Yep, funny how that works.
You know, in her 61st match.
Yeah,
61 matches in the span of time that she's been in AEW, like.
How ironic.
You'd have think she kind of progressed.
You would have thought, but clearly, no. I just can't. I can't do it. Can't do it, Eric.
Can't do it. I don't believe it.
But you know what? Our Lord and Savior, Chris Statlander, is back. She saved us. And now we're going to get a decent title reign. I would almost be a guarantee, I would hope. We're going to get a very good title reign from her. So you know what? All's right in the world once again. Thank God.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank God. And Jack's last comment was that Jungle Hook match was awesome. Preston looked like a total warrior. Bleeding everywhere.
Everywhere,
all over poor Hook too. Like he was just like covered in his own. That guy's been Preston's blood. I'm like, ugh.
And that suplex through the tables.
Jesus,
nasty work.
Ow.
Nasty. Ugh. I'm still banking on Jungle Boy turning on Hook eventually.
You just want to see it. You want to see it happen, don't you?
I do, because I feel like what they're doing is putting meat on that bone, so you when it happens, you don't see it coming.
You just want to make Jack sad, don't you?
Hey, man, like
you want to make him sad.
You know, like sometimes you have to hurt a couple feelings, you know? Again, invoking emotion.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not gonna be happy about it, but I see it. Yeah, whatever. All right. So that was all of Jack's questions and comments. So thank you as always. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Jack.
And we are now going to go to, if I can find it on Twitter, technology is a fun thing, isn't it? Especially when they put the tweets out of order. That's great. We did that. All right. So Our final questions and comments come from Mom. The very first one, we were talking about this in pre-production, was Mom would like to issue us a formal apology and a mea culpa for putting Charlotte coming back into the universe. Yeah, because Mom mentioned it, and then there she was.
Yeah, and like, if it would have came in a segment where she doesn't shoehorn her way into the title picture, I would have said, okay, that's a weird coincidence, but okay. But the fact that it was the typical Charlotte shoehorning her way into a title picture,
now
I got heat with your mom.
We're like, you know what? Thanks, Mom. Appreciate it.
Yeah, like,
hate it.
This is somehow all your mom's fault.
Okay, so you heard it here, guys. This is Mom's fault. She did it. So don't get mad at us.
She's apologizing, but we need to recognize that she is the culprit of this. She put it in the universe, and it happened.
Yeah, and see, look, then this is what we got. So thanks a lot, Mom. We appreciate it.
Yes, but like, I feel with this show, like, it's always a weird coincidence.
We do talk a lot of things into existence.
Yeah. Yeah, we're always on like the cusp of things.
Yeah. I don't know why. We just do. Like, I don't know. Like, I can't describe it. It's
happened more than once.
Yeah, it happens. Like, I mean, granted, the whole Statlander thing was just because I screamed about it long enough that it was just bound to happen. But yeah, there've been things where we're like, you know what, just for the hell of it, we're gonna, maybe this will happen. And then we look and it's like, oh, wait, it actually did happen. You're welcome, yeah. I guess.
And maybe somehow this is something we didn't want to happen.
No, we should have known it was going to happen, but, you know, this is what we deal with, I guess. God, okay, now we're going to keep going before I get mad, because it's just going to make me mad all over again. So funny enough, Mom was not in agreement with the Adam Cole MJF promo. She thought it was fantastic. We thought it was a lot to be desired, but I mean, it goes back to what you said, where it's like, you know what, if you got the emotion out of it, then that's what we want to hear.
Yeah, the thing about wrestling that people seem to forget is it's a subjective form of entertainment.
Oh, it is? I had no idea.
Yeah, like, you know, what one person likes, another person might not, and that's okay. You know, I'm actually glad that somebody got something positive out of what everybody is deeming a negative thing.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. So, hey, at least she found something positive and she enjoyed it, you know?
Yeah, I get it. Gotta give it to Mom. She can sometimes she can find the positives in things, even when we can't.
She's a very positive being.
Yeah, I wish I had some of that sometimes, but somebody in the family has to, I guess. So Mom would like to know, why did the guns have to interfere in the Jay White match? She thought it was a lazy booking decision.
The only problem with that is, like, if Jay White would have won clean, could that have damaged Ricky Starks?
Yeah, it probably would have, honestly.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like they did that kind of screwy finish because, you know, Ricky Starks, like, he's someone that they should be featuring prominently.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, you would think.
They kind of fumbled with Ricky Starks, but like, even they recognize that, like, having him lose clean would probably diminish his value. Should he have beaten Jay White? I don't know. Because again, like I said, AEW's kind of fumbled Jay White, but he at least was a highly touted free agent. Again, he was a free agent that everybody thought would change the landscape of things.
Yeah, not so much, huh?
You know, so I see her point, but they had to do something to justify Jay White winning without taking any shine off of Ricky Starks.
Yeah, it had to be shenanigans. It couldn't just be clean. Unfortunately.
It just had to happen that way. Again, this could be beneficial for the guns, you know, and Jay White, like, it kind of, they kind of click. I can see the potential there. If Juice Robinson wasn't so fucking goofy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a
fair assessment.
Like, if he wasn't just so goofy and so over the top.
And just odd.
It just, you don't believe it. Like,
no.
It's not Juice Robinson turned up to 11. It's just some maniacal, goofy dude with a weird t-shirt just screaming Ricky.
Yeah. God, we got to keep bringing that t-shirt up.
That t-shirt's going to live in wrestling lore forever.
Oh, I hate it so much. Yeah, it just had to happen that way, I guess. There's potential for it to be good, but that remains to be seen one way or the other. And Mom's final question, and this is going to be a fun one. Does anyone really care about Cody Rhodes versus Dominic?
I will go on a limb and say I care a lot.
Okay.
Because my assessment of it is you're taking Dominic Mysterio, who's easily the most hated man in WWE right now.
Yeah.
And you're putting him in the ring with Cody Rhodes, who's arguably the most popular man in WWE right now.
Yeah. This is why we have the same brain cell, because I was thinking the same thing.
You know, so it's like, and it's only going to do wonders for Dominic to be in the ring with someone the caliber of Cody Rhodes.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and like, again, like I said last week, but even take the heel stuff out of it and the booing of the crowd. Just focus on Dominic's in-ring work. It's clicking. It's starting to work. You see him starting to have that confidence in his footwork, his placement, his pacing. So everything is clicking. And so with like the guidance of Cody Rhodes in there, Cody probably being the general and being the one to dictate the spots in the match, it would be good.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it has the potential to be a really good match, so I'm not gonna boot it right out of the gate.
Like, the company has to have some sort of confidence in Dominic to put him in this spot.
Oh yeah, they wouldn't just throw anybody in a match with Cody and expect it to work. Like, you need to have some trust there, and that's a very good sign for Dominic, I'd say, if you're getting into a match with Cody.
Check this out. If they have the match, Money in the Bank, ooh, Brock Lesnar comes out, interferes, and let's say the ref is down or something, he doesn't see it happen, and Dominic gets the pin.
Oh, that people would be pissed in like the best way possible. That would be wild.
And it's in front of the Ravage London crowd.
And it could happen. It could believably happen. That's not there's no way that could happen because X, Y, and Z. No, that could legitimately happen.
I would honestly kind of probably, if I was the one in charge.
You would do that.
I would kind of do that.
Just
to get a reaction out of people.
See, so if it happens, come back to episode 85. You'll know where it happened. You heard it here first.
Could you imagine? You know, the ref takes a bump and he's incapacitated. Brock Lesnar's music hits. He comes down to the ring and he F5s Cody Rhodes twice. And Dominic, all he does is just daintily shoot into a pin.
Yeah.
Drapes his arm over. Not even a full pin. Just drapes his arm over. The ref comes to, counts 1, 2, 3.
God. That is insane. That's insane to even think about because it's just so believable. It could literally happen and you could be like, yeah, that makes sense.
I would kind of do it that way.
Hey, like I said, if it happens, we know who to thank. Need the imaginary pencil that turned out to be a little too real.
Yeah. Oh my God. The potential for that.
See, now we need to see if it actually happens. And then we'll be like, well, guys, we told you so.
Shout out to WWE in the UK for allowing us to have a pay-per-view at 3 p.m. so we don't have to spend all day in front of our TV.
Yeah, honestly, it's great. It's a great time.
Love it.
But yeah, no, I'm excited to see what they can do with it. Just to see what'll happen and to see at this rate if that actually happens at the end, because that'd be wild. Yeah. So yeah, I would want to see it.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, and with that, I do believe we have gone through all of our questions.
Awesome. These were fun questions. They had us thinking. They had us fantasy booking. They had us deep diving into psychology of wrestling. So these were a great crop of questions.
Oh yeah, these are really good. We always love these.
Yeah, for sure. Now, if you're a listener and you've never sent in a question, why not? You know, this is your platform as much as it is ours. So we want you to send in questions. If you're a wrestling fan and you want to get our opinion on certain stuff, the best way to do that is to hit us up on social media. The Ringside and Rundown podcast is available on Twitter, social media, and Instagram at the same handle, at Ringside Rundown. So make sure you check that out. Hit the follow button. It would be greatly appreciated. Again, that's at Ringside Rundown. If you want to talk to me individually about wrestling or anything of the like, check out my Twitter at Wrestling Cron. That's Wrestling C-H-R-O-N. Again, that's Wrestling Cron. Check out the weird stuff that I like to talk about on Twitter when it comes to wrestling. I'm so deep into wrestling Twitter now, I'm finding things that are just blowing my mind. So if like you want to deep dive into all things wrestling, no matter if it's current wrestling, past wrestling, territory days, anything like that, there's a whole smorgasbord of that stuff on my Twitter timeline. So check me out, Wrestling Cron. Shay, where can they check you out?
Can find me on Twitter at ShayleneHixon21. I may not always tweet very often, but if you look at my likes, I have quite a few different interests. So if you're into like Star Wars video games, drag, sports, music, you know, the usuals, there's a good chance we will have something in common. So if you ever want to hit me up on there, you know where to find me. Other than that, I usually just promote the stuff for the podcast. That's pretty much all I do, is just like things and tell people to watch or to listen to our episodes, but we do what needs to be done.
For sure. The best way to check out this podcast, we use Anchor FM. So through Anchor FM, they distribute the podcast to various platforms. Basically, wherever you listen to podcasts, the Ringside Rundown is available. So just search the Ringside Rundown. It's available on Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Apple. Like I said, wherever you listen to podcasts, this podcast is available. So hit the subscribe button. It's greatly appreciated if you do. If for some reason you can't find it on your platform of choice, just hit us up on social media, like we said, and we'll send you a link to the podcast so you can listen to it. We'll send it to you on a silver platter. But the caveat is you have to give us back that silver platter because we only have one. So again, if you can't find it, just let us know. I'm always available. I always have my phone in my hand. You know, so you'll get a response fairly quickly, and we'll get you the episode for you to listen to. So again, hit us up on social media, check us out, throw a follow our way, hit a subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast. Again, like we said earlier, we're quickly approaching 100 episodes, which is a big milestone.
It's so insane.
Yeah, that's a lot of wrestling talk.
That is, yeah, that's 100 weeks of...
That is a lot of wrestling talk, and again, we wouldn't do it without the support of our listeners and the people that send in questions. And like we said earlier, like this is an open platform for any wrestling fan to discuss wrestling. Obviously you can see whatever your opinion or your question or your knowledge of wrestling, we're not gonna shit on you. We have an open discussion, open dialogue. And we kind of like to dive deep into the psychology of things. So, you know, everyone's welcome here. This is an open, safe space for any wrestling fan.
Yes, I completely agree.
All right. So, with that said, we are going to get the heck out of here. Thank you for listening to the episode. Tell all your friends and your family members and all your wrestling fans to check us out. We greatly appreciate it. For Shay Hixon, my name is Eric Vasquez, and we'll see you next time.
See you later, guys.